If you're on a quest to find One-Eyed Willy, then look no further. Episode 5 of the Davis Locker Feel Good Film Special is here, and it's a Goonies special.
Hey, you guys! You've just entered the Davis Locker.
Hello and welcome to the Davis Locker. I am your host, Chris Davis, and with me, as always, it's the goon to my docs, Papa Fratelli himself, it's Gazza D. What's happening, partner?
How's it going? You all right?
I don't know what you did to Mama Fratelli to produce those three boys, but Jesus.
Good lookers, aren't they?
Handsome lads. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's as recording. Today, yesterday was Star Wars Day, wasn't it?
So it was indeed.
So much action over our Facebook, and everyone was loving kind of all the stuff we've done. So we're posting all content that we've produced, like the prelude that was very Star Wars laden. I mean, there's a link in the description if you want to go and check that out. But yeah, I mean, it was everywhere, wasn't it? Star Wars, love it.
Oh, fantastic! And thank you everyone who interacted with us and engaged with the content. It's been incredible. We had a reach of, I mean, it's still climbing now. The reach was something like it's near on 200,000 people now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So fantastic result for us. And we're just so glad that everyone really likes what we're putting out, I guess, aren't we?
Yeah, that's it. And yeah, like you say, we had so many comments, so many likes. But it varied, wasn't it? Even we got a little bit of Baby Yoda in there for good measure.
Yeah, a little bit of Baby Yoda, the genesis of Baby Yoda, you might say, how he came to be. Probably quite similar to you and Mama Fratelli guy, I guess.
Not as sexy. You know?
But again, thank you. But don't forget, you do still have to go and subscribe to the channel to keep up to date with all of our new content. We're / The Davis Locker on YouTube. So please get over there, hit the subscribe button, hit that notification bell icon, and then you'll see every single time we put stuff up. Isn't it, guy?
That's right.
They won't have to wait, will they? They won't have to wait.
Couldn't be more simpler.
Right then, let's crack on what we're doing today.
So yes, this is the Goonies special. We're dedicating it to the one film that everybody, when we pulled on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, said it was their favourite. I mean, it was a hard run race against E.T., which we've already covered. But this came out as number one.
It did. I mean, when we put the E.T. stuff out, we were saying, is E.T. the best family film ever made? And I even said on the episode, I think it's de facto probably regarded as the best family film ever made. Now I'm not so sure because I've been at the Goonies again. And like I say, we were influenced by all of the people commenting, saying, whoa, hang on, Goonies is just as good, if not better than E.T. So, you know, what are you talking about? So we readdressed the balance, didn't we, Gar?
Yeah, and that's it. As you say, normally we have two movies, kind of a companion piece, but now there's just one episode, one film, the Goonies special. So let's crack on. So the Goonies. It was released in 1985, directed by Richard Donner and produced by Steven Spielberg. It's about a group of young misfits known as the Goonies who find an ancient map and set off on an adventure to find a legendary pirate's treasure-laden ship. Let's check out the trailer. Run, VT!
Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.
Time chunk.
Hey, my cousin, map!
You guys realize what we could do?
I don't want to go on any more of your crazy Goonie adventures.
Meet Mikey.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Brand. Andy.
Shame, shame.
Come on, Brand. Slipper the tongue.
That's disgusting. No, I can't even look.
Mouth.
I gotcha. Now get out from behind her. You're ruining the painting.
You're ruining my job.
Stephanie. Data.
Boy Bango.
Ow.
Dad, isn't that neat?
And Chunk.
Flopped.
They call themselves the Goonies. They've stumbled onto a legend, but they're not alone.
Chunk, I hope that was your stomach.
No. That's the it. Sounds like Kong.
discover what they uncover.
Rubies and emeralds and diamonds?
The lost map.
Whoa! Chris started the tunnel!
The secret caves.
Hey, Mikey! You can hear me! Run! Run! They're coming after you!
Just learn!
The hidden clues.
Mikey!
The treacherous traps.
Just like that last prank about all those little creatures that multiply when you throw water on them.
Take the oath.
I'm here! I'm here!
Somebody's coming!
Join the adventure as Steven Spielberg presents The Goonies, a Richard Donner film.
It just never surprises me how much I enjoy this bloody film. It's so good. And it's just, it's so influential, isn't it? You know, you look at it, I mean, like you said there in the intro, directed by Richard Donner, from an idea by Spielberg, who produced the film, and then written by Chris Columbus. Yeah. I mean, that's like a sort of a trio of awesome, isn't it, really? Let's be honest.
I mean, it must have just been so fun to be in that writer's room, all those three minds. It would have been awesome.
Imagine, and you got like, the period it came out, so it came out 1985, you kind of, the 70s have gone by and they were sort of filled with flowery sort of Disney style kids films like your Peach Dragons and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, in 1984, you had the sort of PG-13 rating come in. So you've got, you know, movies that are kind of coming out now with this rating that are for older kids. Now, The Goonies just avoided the PG-13 rating, but it's a kids film, but it's a damn smart kids film. And what I love about The Goonies is it doesn't treat kids like idiots.
Yeah.
Does it? It's really on a level with them. It's kids being kids. It's fantastic. I can't, you know, I'm going to have so many superlatives as we go through this episode just because it's so good. And I, you know, like I said, I'm not forgotten, but I just can't believe how good this film is and how special it is. You know, it really is something. Are we going to go through this like sort of chronologically, Gar? Are we going to go through?
I think so. I think we should kind of go through the cast first because they really they're so good as an ensemble group. They've all got their own characteristics, their own kind of personalities, but they seem to just meld together fantastically well. Yeah. And it just, nothing seems forced. They just genuinely seem like they were all best friends.
Yeah. Who are we going to start with then? Mikey, Sean Astin.
Yeah, well, what I loved, do you know, when the intro's on, it's and it says stars in alphabetical order, so there's no arguments between the kids.
Let's start with Sean Astin then. I mean, a fantastic actor. And clear from the off, you know, when he's in films like this as a young kid, that he was, you know, destined to be, you know, one of, not great, but have a great career. You know, and he has, obviously, he's a Lord of the Rings alumni. Fantastic as Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings, the real kind of hero of it. And I think that's what he is, Sean Astin, if you think about it. When I was watching Goonies, I was thinking, do you know, he's the real MVP in the films he's in. He's the most valuable player, and he's like, Samwise Gamgee was the real hero of The Lord of the Rings, let's be honest. Were it not for him, it all would have gone up the creek. He is Bob Newby in Stranger Things.
Yeah,
another heroic role where he sacrifices once again. And then obviously in this, Mikey, the leader of the Goonies, the dreamer, the optimist, the man with the plan, the man with the map. And for me, the real MVP of these films. It's just, he's brilliant. But they all are in this. The kids, that's what makes it so good. The kids' performances are just stellar.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
You've also got Corey Feldman, who... Mm. It was a kind of, I'm not sure if this is completely correct, but it said he was going to be starring in Big, but he didn't get a role in that. And so he was promised in the next Spielberg kind of film, he said, right, I'll get you a role in this. And that's how it came to be.
Apparently so, yeah. I read that also, yeah. I mean, and again, an incredible young actor at the time. You know, he was huge in the 80s. Huge. Yeah. I mean, Stand By Me, The Lost Boys, you know, I mean... There was seemingly nothing he couldn't do at the time, this kid, you know, and obviously he's had all the troubles he's had in his life and all of the recent things that have come to light, and we won't get into that here because that's not the vibe of this, but back then he could do no wrong.
Yeah.
Could do no wrong.
And you kind of, you always knew, because I think he's such a good, like, physical performer as well.
Oh, yeah.
You always knew, oh, yeah, if he's in an 80s film, it's going to be a good film. Mm,
yeah, and then Jeff Cohen.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid, right, I think for me, he's the standout. In terms of acting performance in this film, I think he'd be the standout for me, because he's so funny, so comical, and his chops, like his comedy chops, are just way above for someone his age. I mean, have you seen, there's an interview with him on Wogan.
Yeah.
At the time we're doing the Goonies, and he can have the banter, I hate the word banter, but he can have the banter with a grown TV, an experienced TV host, like it's nothing, like an adult.
Yeah.
And he's genuinely funny, genuinely witty, and he outsmarts Wogan a few times.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if you haven't seen it, have a look. We've just put in Jeff Cohen Wogan on YouTube, and it'll blow your mind. He's in this crazy hat with, like, seagull's wings on it or something. And he's as sharp as mustard. Unbelievable. Yeah. And in this film, I mean, like I say, is like you say, his physical comedy is so funny. Some of the scenes where he has touching moments with Sloth, scenes where he... Like his reactionary acting, I find, is amazing. And the amount of things that he actually ad-libbed as well.
Mm.
You know, and we'll get onto that. But an amazing performance from him as well.
And the thing is, he didn't really take on acting.
No.
He didn't have a long career. He's a lawyer now, I think.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. And it surprised me, because he's so good. You know, maybe the life wasn't for him, or I don't know. But when you look, he looks like a kid who kind of, on that interview, for example, he already seems like a comedian who's done the club circuit.
Yeah.
He's that sharp. So maybe he was just, you know, he burned out young because he was like an old head on young shoulders. I don't know. But
maybe.
In this film, he's probably the best for me in terms of the performance as a whole. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, good.
And we've got Thanos.
Thanos, yeah. Well, the last in the Goonies is Jonathan Kee Wan, isn't it? Data. Yeah, he's like Data. The inventor, which kind of mostly goes wrong.
Amazing.
But some of the stuff he comes out with. Obviously, he's been in the Indiana Jones films as well.
Yeah.
So, a fantastic little run he had as well.
Yeah, he did. And in this film, I mean, from the first scenes where he's... And actually, I'll get onto this in a sec, but the first scenes where he introduces him has, you know, they introduce these characters around the police chase scene, don't they? And I love that. It's such a great way to do what, you know, to introduce the Goonies, and you see them in their different guises, and you see a piece of exactly what they are as a character, don't you, as this police chase is going on in the background.
Yeah.
And when you see Data and he fires those things at the bin and then he ends up inside it, and then the car zooms past, and he's just, he's gold for me. I mean, it's like you think of Data and you just think of your childhood.
Yeah,
because you wish, when you see his like boxing glove on a spring and all that kind of thing, and the pinches of peril and the sticky shoes, you just wish that you had those things. And you're a bit of an inventor back in our day, weren't you, guy? You're a bit of a Tony Stark, as we always call you.
Yeah, I try to be.
And you had a few inventions back in the day, didn't you? But you know,
it's just like all little stuff I used to. Yeah, like peg guns and
peg guns.
Bow and arrows off a bit of the swing we cut off.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some, I think it was like fishing wire, wasn't it? With like some surgical tape wrapped around. Just
not as lethal as the pea shooters we made once. They were, I say pea, they were stone shooters. Oh my God.
Flipping heck.
Oh my word. If we had them now, if we had those now, we could go on some sort of vigilante lockdown patrol. Keep people in their houses with armed with pea shooters. Get in the house. But Data, a fantastic character again, and we'll get into more of his highlights as we go on, won't we? But yeah, I did mention briefly Josh Brolin, Thanos, as I called him. And I couldn't believe, right? I mean, he plays the character of Brand, but I couldn't believe that this young kid turned into that gravelly-voiced legend that Josh Brolin is now. I mean, I don't know where it happened. I mean, in his 20s/30s, I don't know if he's started smoking like 1,000 cigarettes a day or something. But it just doesn't sound like his voice in this film would sort of, you know, mould into the voice that he has now.
Yeah.
Because I think his voice is one of the most recognisable in cinema at the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and again, agree, another brilliant performance from him. He's only 17 at the time, I think. And there's a really nice scene, and I'll kind of get into it now, because I think it sort of sums up Brand's character early on, because initially you sort of think, oh, is he a bit of a jock douchebag? Don't you? You sort of think, is he the older brother who picks on his little brother, blah, blah, blah. But when you have the scene where Troy's dad comes and serves the papers to them when they're at the house at the beginning, because basically what's happening is in the Goondocks there's a rich local property magnate who's going to tear down all their houses, and this is kind of their last hurrah, isn't it, as friends, and they're going to have to move on somewhere else and all this kind of thing. And Troy's dad turns up with the papers, the local country club owner, etc. Serves them to Brand, and he says, give them to your dad. And then you have that lovely shot of Mikey, you know, wistful, looking over the Goondocks, and he's stood on the balcony of the house, and he sort of leans over, and he's got that look in his eye, and then the camera pans around, and you see what the Goondocks are. You see the sea in the background, and you see the houses, and it's this lovely kind of grey place in Oregon, in Astoria, Oregon. And then you get Brand comes out the other side of the balcony and gives him a hug, like a proper big brotherly hug, doesn't he? And I think it's at that point for me where you think, oh, okay, maybe he's not what you think he is. And obviously he turns out to be exactly that, a good guy, you know, and you don't expect it from the off, you know. But another great performance.
All of them, everyone that's in it is fantastic. It's so good, isn't it? It's like you say, when those all the characters being introduced via that car chase. So the Fratellis, one of the Fratellis, Jake Fratelli's been in prison. His mum and his brother kind of break him out, and then so the police are trying to get him. But as it whizzes through Oregon, they kind of introduce. But it's so fantastic because every like little item is showing these characters, like Chunks in the arcade with a pizza and a milkshake, Mouse helping his dad, isn't he? And he's got the TV on. He's like, turn that down, and he starts having a go at his dad. And what I do like, though, is Mikey's one is very, very subtle. Mm. He's at his house and he's looking through a telescope like a stargazer, like looking up to the heavens, like the dreamer. Yeah. And I just thought that was so clever, that.
Yeah, I'm very much like a pirate. Obviously, one of their key tools for navigation would have been some sort of old looking glass or telescope or whatever you want to call it. But you're saying about the police breakout scene, it's so dark initially. Yeah. And it sets out its stall like from the off. I mean, it's a kid's film, yeah? And the first scene, you've got a guy hanging. like a dead body. And yes, it transpires that it's fake and he pretends to be dead to break out of the prison. But the initial sort of iconography of it, as you see the scene, you think, oh my God, this is dark. And then they come out and you've got obviously Mama Fratelli and what's Joey Pants?
Francis. Francis.
What's the character's name? I always forget his. I know Jake is the other one, Robert Davi, whatever.
Jake Francis.
Francis.
Yeah.
Francis, of course. Yeah, so, Joey Pants, we've got to say get well soon, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, flipping heck, he's been in a bit of an accident. I think he was walking along wherever he lives, it's somewhere in LA, I think it is, and a car hit another car, and that car spun and hit him and knocked him into some fence and gouged his head. Yeah. Like, bloody hell,
I mean, he's okay.
Apparently he is okay, but it's pretty a bad injury, but yeah, he's fine. But he's one of those people that's just in every film, it seems.
And I mean, Baby's Day Out is a good one that he's in. And obviously The Matrix, he's horrible in that and annoying in that.
Yeah.
Again,
Bad Boys.
You've got to talk about their performances. You know, they're supposed to be, and this is what's really great about these kinds of kids' films, is you've got these baddies, and this is why The Goonies is another reason why The Goonies got this recipe that's so fantastic, is that in a lot of kids' films, you'll have baddies that they kind of, they're not really bad. They're the villains, but they're not like, they're not super evil. They're just kind of a bit naughty. In The Goonies, you've got these really evil people who've murdered people. But they somehow get away with that feeling that they're not mega naughty.
Yeah.
They're almost, because they're so comical, because there's a lot of slapstick in what they do, especially between the brothers. It's the two of them, it's like the two stooges, isn't it, you know, for the most part. And one of the reasons, you know, that they were cast, Rob Davey and Joey Pants, it's because of that dynamic they had in the audition, so I've read, and then you've got obviously the matriarch Mama Fratelli, who for want of a better phrase has got a face like a bulldog licking piss off a thistle.
She's not hell.
You know, she's not. You know, I'm no oil painting, but Mama Fratelli isn't a handsome woman. You know, I'm not being mean there. You know, and she's made a career out of it, didn't she? You know, but the fantastic Anne Ramsey. And and another brilliant performance from her. Like, you can't imagine anyone else in that role.
Yeah.
Such is the way that all these characters are played. I couldn't recast the Goonies. I wouldn't want to, for a start. But I don't think you could look at the Goonies and go, oh, well, I would have cast. I don't think you could. It's one of those films where the cast, it's all perfect.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then Sloth.
The big man.
Lotney Fratelli, apparently. I read that today,
Lotney,
a bit
yes,
trivial.
That's
Lotney,
right.
Yeah.
That's his name, Lotney Fratelli. Yeah. Well, they didn't like him, did they? In any
bloody
way.
Hell, poor lad. Yeah.
Jeez, dropped on his head or wherever he was and nicknamed Lotney. And then nicknamed Sloth.
I know, yeah, where does that come from, Sloth?
Have they gone, Mama, Lotney's... We can't go around calling him Lotney. I'm not standing by the front door shouting, Lotney, what are we going to call him? Sloth.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Why Sloth? He doesn't move around, yeah, because he's chained in the basement. Poor lad.
Played by John Matuszak, former NFL player, massive, brute of a man. And I don't know that much about his background, actually, really, other than he was an NFL player. You know what I mean?
No,
we try not to do sort of too much research in this because it becomes a bit robotic, doesn't it? And you'd rather just have what we kind of know about the film already and just go for it, wouldn't we, really, and have a chat. But, right, okay, so that's the cast. So we've established they were outstanding in every way, I would say, in this film. Their performance is incredible. The Goonies wouldn't be the Goonies without how good these kids were as actors, would it?
Yeah.
So let's move on then. Let's kick it off, guys. Let's get going. So we've had the intro, we've had the breakout. Now we're into the house where the Goonies are beginning to converge and we're getting that group dynamic. Tell me what you think about that.
So the Walsh residence, that's where he seems to hang out. Yeah. And you can see they're all playing off each other, they're all taking the mick, there's loads of banter just establishing that these guys are the best of friends. And then I just love that bit where the mum comes back with Rosalita, she's going to help him out doing a packing. I think Mrs. Walsh has hurt her arm or something.
Yes, she has, yeah.
And she's like, can you help, is it Lawrence? No, what's his name? Charles, is it?
Who's this now?
Mouth. Whatever his real name is, I can't remember. I think it may be Charles. And then she's like, oh, can you help me do some, you know Spanish, can you help me do some translating? And she's like going, yeah, so all the socks and the pants go into this drawer. And he's like going, oh, yeah, this is where the drugs are. The heroin goes at the top. And then they go past the attic and he's like, oh, yeah, no one really goes in the attic. Can you translate that for me? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's Mr. Walsh's sex torture chamber or whatever. It's like, so straight away, you're saying like it is. Yeah, it's a kid's film, but flipping it, there's some... We've had a guy hang himself.
Yeah.
We've had drug references. We've had sex references.
Yeah. But like I said, these kid actors, they're clearly old before their time anyway. So they're given this dialogue and they're set free with it. And I like that because when we were that age, we were saying shit and all that kind of stuff and talking about stupid stuff. You know, there's loads of bullshit and shit in the Goonies. It just is what it is. And that's what I like. I said earlier, it doesn't treat kids like idiots. It's not flowery. It's not fluffy. It's kids being kids. And it's real. You know what I mean? It's relatable and real. Like, look at us. We loved a bit of adventure, didn't we, back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
We had a den, didn't we? We had a den that we had to go on a mini sort of excursion to get to called the Vaults. The Vaults was amazing, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, it was dangerous.
It was like
going chasing after some treasure down some dangerous alleyways. It was through trees, people's gardens trying to get there. Dogs guarded it.
And it was our little spot, wasn't it? And it was our place to kind of sit there and dream, you know, and talk about stuff like making radio shows and now eventually doing this, still mucking about like a bunch of kids at this age, still running around in forests and dressing up.
That's it, yeah.
But, you know, it's that sense of youth, the sense of adventure, and it really, really draws you in. And from the off, when they're in the house and they're talking and they... You know, they knock the statue over and there's the little in jokes about the penis on the statue and all this kind of thing. And it's just so, it's mature kids comedy, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's, like we always say now with animated films, there's jokes in it for the parents. This is really jokes for the parents. This is what you call jokes for the parents. You know, Toy Story's great in a lot of ways and there's jokes for the parents, but the Goonies has got jokes for the parents. You know, it's that style. And I love when they go up into the attic, obviously, and kind of everything starts from there, and you get the, oh, God, how dare we go this far on without mentioning the Truffle Shuffle.
Oh, yeah.
How dare we?
Yeah.
Should we take it? Let's take a quick look at the iconic scene of the Truffle Shuffle.
It's Chunk. I just saw the most amazing thing of my entire life. First, you gotta do the Truffle Shuffle. Come on. Do it. Come on. Do it.
So there you go, the iconic Truffle Shuffle. Now, we've all done it. We've all got our mates to do it. I don't think you get away with doing it now in a film.
No, probably not.
Would you? What do you think?
No way.
You wouldn't, would you? I mean, that kind of fat shaming, you know, you wouldn't get away with it in a film now. And that's not a bad thing. But, you know, the Truffle Shuffle is... It's hilarious. It's classic. Yeah. And I think Donner himself even said, you know, it's bullying in a way that, and he said you wouldn't get away with it now. I think is, and I always paraphrase and I'll do it again. But he says something that, you know, there's the best humour comes from pain.
Yeah.
And he said he thinks in a lot, in that scene particularly, he thinks Jeff Cohen had used a bit of pain because you've got that pain of embarrassment of showing your fat belly on the film and all that kind of thing. And he said that he thinks that played into the scene and did make it funnier.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to be funny in a film, exploit the pain of the child actors. That's what they say. Apparently. But, I mean, an iconic scene, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then, they get into the attic, don't you? That's what you were talking about. They get into the attic.
Yes.
They they find the old map, which they give it to Chunk, don't they? Because he's dead clumsy, so he drops it. So that's how they get it out. And they find... and there's like a press cutting about Chester Copperpot. He went out and tried to find One-Eyed Willie's treasure. And they kind of, it's one of those kind of folklore things around town that people are, well, there's this treasure here, but loads of people went after it and they don't really think it's real. Yeah. But Mikey, ever the dream, is like, no, it's out there and this could save us. So he finds the bloom and that's when the adventure starts.
Yeah, oh, amazing. And I love the bits just before it when they're looking through the stuff because basically Mikey's dad works in the museum, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So they've got these things from an old exhibit. And I love that line that Mikey says, oh, you know, they're just rejects or whatever he says. And then Chunk says, oh, rejects, Mike, kind of like us, the Goonies. And I think from that moment on, like when I was a kid, you're hooked in, aren't you? Because you're thinking, I want to be in the Goonies. Yeah. I want to be a reject. I want to, you know, I want to be an underdog, which we always talk about in Feel Good Films, is always an underdog. And, there's so many funny elements in that attic scene, and it's so well shot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like the way it's done, it's like there's so many elements of horror in the Goonies that you can't believe. And you know, we were talking about influencing as you know, films influenced and things influenced by the Goonies and how influential it was. You look at things like Stranger Things, the new It films. I would say have got a very big Goonies influence.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand By Me was only sort of the year after, so I don't know how, if that had any influence. It was probably not. Yeah. But you can look that at the time they were making films with, you know, kids in that were mature for their age and smart, like we're saying about the Goonies. Yeah. Stand By Me is another example, isn't it? You know, what was the point I was making? Yeah, it was so influential, and you can see that from these early scenes. I think, you know, and you look at things like Stranger Things and all that, you can't escape it.
Yeah.
And when they find the map and they find the doubloon, and there is it. I mean, we've got one here somewhere actually. Where has it gone? Let me find it. Hang on.
Behind you.
Where's my Goonies? Where's my doubloon?
Is it right there in the middle? Is it behind Captain Cap and Superman?
Where's the doubloon?
It's the. It's not the doubloon that we got. It's the copper bones.
Yeah, oh, I don't know where it is. Anyway, I can't find it. We've got one somewhere. Do you know, I don't think I've stood up there. I don't think I have my trousers. Oh well, this is real. This is real life podcasting. But anyway, so yeah, so Chester Copperpot, they find the map and they're going to go out on this adventure. And it's pure imagination from that point on, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's everything you want as a kid, you know. And I got to say when. When they do eventually escape, because obviously Mikey's got asthma, he's not allowed out.
Yeah.
Mrs. Walsh has said to Brand, like, don't let him out or you're dead meat, basically. And then, and this is one of the, this is probably the only bit in the Goonies that I've, or one of the only bits I've got a bit of a problem with.
Right.
Is the method in which Brand is rendered incapable of stopping them going out with this weight springy thing, and they just sort of put it around him. He's just like, oh, wait till I get my hands on you, or whatever he says. And it's like, just pull your arms out, Brand.
Yeah.
You can see, you barely held in, mate. So that's the one of the things that annoys me. I tell you what else as well, while they're in the house, sorry, I've got to say this because I noticed it today when I was watching it. I would never have known back in the day, and I thought about this, all the times I've seen the film when I was younger, there's a scene where obviously they come into the kitchen, Chunk's on the squirty cream.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm highly proficient at that. Always have been. A connoisseur of the squirty cream, facial squirt. Easy. And but there's the next bit, one of them goes, I think it's mouth, gets some kitchen roll off the wall.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know what kitchen roll was, so I was like 25. You know, we grew up in on Welsh council estates. Like, I didn't know what kitchen roll was, so I was in my 20s. No, easy. No. So I only got that today. I only noticed it today, because I would never have noticed it back in the day. I'd have just thought, well, that's a massive bog roll on the wall. Who's wiping their ass in the kitchen? But anyway, I have to mention that bit. But so from there then, we go into some scenes that we love, and we did kind of parody in our prelude, didn't we?
Yeah.
Now we say prelude. I'm sort of trying to get guys to say prelude. I think that's quite a good. I don't know why anyone would say it like that, but maybe not. But in the prelude, we had some scenes with the biking. When they go off on the bikes, it's pure kids' adventure. You know, E.T., Stranger Things, all these things have got these scenes in, haven't they?
It's just
magic. And we got some great shots of you, didn't we, Gar?
Yeah, well, that's it. Because in Goonies, they escape, don't they? But they don't want Brand chasing after him. So he's like, take the air out of his tyres and then we can get off. So it's like the only way that Brand can follow is obviously that the girl next door, she must be six. So he's like, little girl, let me take your bike. And he's, a little pink bike, and he's off, isn't he?
Yeah, and like I say, you've got previous guests. Shall we have a look at it?
Let's do it, yeah.
Let's do it.
These are new tyres.
You give me the bike now. Mm-hmm. You will give me the bike now. Bike now, you will give to me.
No, it's my bike.
I owe you one.
So yes, so some fantastic shots that we obviously had to reference in the prelude, because you know, to a lot of people, they might just seem like throwaway shots. It's a nice aerial shot of them, and then you know, they're riding down through a story and all this kind of thing. But to us, they're just, as soon as we had the idea we wanted to do some Goonies stuff in the prelude, it was that, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It was that the bike stuff? Also, in that brief. I'm a bit embarrassed about this. In that brief intermission, Gaz pointed out that the, what's it called? The skull bones key, whatever we call it. What's it called?
Copper bones, I think.
Bones is nestled safely behind my massive fat head. There. So so I was looking for it and it was right in front of me the whole time. Here it is. I'll come right close so you can have a good look at it. Come on.
Nice.
Here we go. Copper bones.
I'll ruin your focus.
So there it is. So we do have it, and we got it by finding this massive galleon ship in Oregon when we were younger. But anyway, so let's move on. So we got the bikes. They go off on the bikes. They escape Brand. Brand is left in the chair, albeit not very securely tight, let's be honest. But then he gets out once Mrs. Walsh comes home, and off he goes to get his bike. He realises the tyres are flat. Reenacts a scene that we just saw. And the rest of the lads are off to seek out this area on the coast where they think they're going to find One-Eyed Willie's treasure. Yeah. En route. Do you know, there's a bit that freaks me out. As a dad, I was like, oh, God, good grief. When they're on the bikes and...
Mikey stops.
When he stops, you know it.
He nearly falls off, doesn't he?
Nearly, low sides it big time.
Yeah.
And he drops the map. And it's definitely not scripted, because there's no way. There's no way, you know, you could do that kind of stunt work.
Yeah.
It made me go, oh, God. Oh, it's not my mic. It made me think, oh, I hope he's all right there. You know, I worried he was going to fall off. But so from there, they go and they go to this old... Is it a restaurant or a cafe? What would you call it?
Restaurant, yeah, it is a restaurant. Old but restaurant. Before that, it's on the way, like Brand's chasing after him, and he meets Troy, doesn't he? And that's where he kind of introduces Andy and Steph. But yeah, Troy is the son of Mr. Perkins, the real estate developer. They're obviously from a very wealthy family. And a little bit earlier, it's said that Brand screwed up his driving test, didn't he? And that's why he's not got a car.
Yeah.
But Troy comes with his flashy car, and he offers to give him a lift. But by doing it, he kind of grabs his hand, and he's on this little... He just drives as fast as he can. The stabilizers fall off, and then he loses going in like E.T. He just goes straight off the cliff, doesn't he?
He's such a dirtbag, Troy, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's
such a dirtbag. I mean, in that scene, he's trying to angle his rearview mirror to look up Andy's skirt and stuff, and all this kind of thing. And he's just such a... And he plays it well. You know, again, another good performance. Like, I don't know the actor's name. I can find it if you want to know.
But see, I'm always kind of surprised that Andy was with him.
I know.
She just doesn't seem like the kind of girl that would be associated with Troy.
She seems quite cool, doesn't she? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there you go. But yeah, he's a massive dirtbag, and I hate him.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he got his come up. I'm glad he gets his come up and slated in the film. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah.
But so then after we've introduced Stefan and Andy and Troy, Brand's gone off the edge of the cliff on the kid's bike. The Angel 16 was the name of the bike we used when it got for those scenes.
Yeah, flipping heck. I did a couple of them, didn't I? Being straight off.
We got a brilliant one, and I'll see if I can find the footage where we were doing the drone shots. And now, there was only three of us making this whole thing. So in terms of prop mastery and health and safety, we were limited. And on this bike, we hadn't really checked it over, and we got this drone, and we went out into... the mountains of Wales and found some really nice location for it, didn't we? And I was like, right, Gaz, I fired the drone up, got up in the air. I was like, right, Gaz, head down there now, pedal pretty fast, because you know it's got to look good. Gaz starts pedaling. None of us had checked whether the bike was actually kind of all screwed together properly. And I got this shot. It's horribly overexposed, but I got this shot of Gaz, an aerial view of him just hitting the deck like a sack of spuds because the handlebars came off the bike.
So I wanted to do like a little wheelie. I thought, oh, this will look good. I'll do a wheelie, pulled the handlebars up, and nothing else came. But the thing is, I tried to keep going, like, press the brakes, they weren't working. But no, then...
Well, you love Tom Cruise, don't you? You do your own stunts, don't you, bud?
Yeah.
You know, you love the cruiser. I bet he's never done that. I bet he's never had the balls to ride a dodgy kid's bike.
Seen the latest news about the cruiser. He's going up into space with Elon Musk. He's going to do a space movie.
So I believe. I mean, that is doing a space movie as well, isn't it, really? Talk about method.
It's how they got to top the next Mission Impossible, isn't it?
Right, anyway, let's get back to the Goonies. So, what were we saying? I totally forgot. I've gone on a tangent.
When in the restaurant, the Fratelli's restaurant.
Yes, yeah, so this is where, obviously, we finally see the Fratellis and the Goonies all converging together. And I think this is a fantastic scene. I really, really do. I mean, again, going back to the comedy acting of both the kids and the Fratellis in this, where they're sort of threatening them, and you've got Robert Davies sort of doing his opera, because he's a trained opera singer.
Yeah.
And obviously, Mama Fratelli scaring the kids, and they're brilliant. They're like all huddled together, like looking left, right, left, right. Don't know which way to look, do they? And it's just, It's just magic. And what happens then is they get out, don't they? They leave, don't they?
Yeah, leaving. Mikey goes downstairs, sees, kind of hears Sloth.
Yeah.
And then they leave, but then they wait for the Fratellis to leave, and then they go back in.
That's right, yeah. Because Mikey's convinced, isn't he, that there's something there, you know, and he's like, this is our time, you know, the one-eyed Willy's treasure's there, it's down there somewhere, he knows it, you know, and it's only him that wants to do it, and the rest are kind of like thinking, oh, let's just get off, you know. I think this is why we were bad when we were young, though, because we were both like Mikey, weren't we? We were both like, well, yeah, let's just do it. Let's just go and find something, you know what I mean? Let's go and build something. I say build something, I couldn't build anything. Gaz used to do the building. But it's rubbish. But, you know, we used to go off and do all these things, and we were both like a couple of Mikeys, and I think we'd have been knackered. The Fratellis would have been in the cold store with that dead body. Like that. Lock them in. So they go back. Obviously, they go into the basement bit, don't they? And at this point, Brand and Andy and Steph have sort of joined the party, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's obviously there's chemistry between Brand and Andy. And like you say, you think to yourself, why was she with Troy then?
I know, yeah.
And because she's supposed to be going on a date with Brand as well, isn't she? On like the Friday or something, or whatever it is.
I was wondering just like maybe if Steph's parents, Andy's parents are rich as well, maybe like almost like Karate Kid, where they're trying to pair the two kids up, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I think he does say, because at one point she does say, I'm not a Goonie. And obviously why they call themselves Goonies is because they're from the Goondocks, like the rough area of Astoria. So maybe that probably is what that is in reference to. So I think you're probably right there. But So the adventure kind of begins here. The Goonies, they go down, they find a way down, they see Sloth at one point. Yeah. It's Mikey. First comes across him, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, the elements of horror, that's like Frankenstein's monster for me. You know, chained up, dark, really well shot again, like fantastically well lit. A very scary sequence for a kid. And Goonies is one that, like, my little lad's kind of seen, but I've shown him bits.
Well, yeah, so I was like, in preparation, I was like, yeah, I've got to watch it again.
Yeah.
So I said to my wife, oh, I'm going to show the kids Goonies. So my eldest is 6 and my youngest is like nearly 3. And she's like, oh, you can't show them the Goonies. I was like, what? It's a family film. But then when you kind of reflect back on it, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, well, luckily, I watched it a couple of times before, and then I gave like the watered down version of certain bits, and then it fast forward on some bits, you know, where I know there's going to be a lot of curse words and that kind of stuff. But that's
the thing, there is, like you say, there is a lot of swearing there, but apparently it's very strategic where they put those swear words. When it went to TV, you can cut it out if you wanted to.
Yeah, they drowned it with a lot of sound.
Of anything.
Yeah, sorry, but I talked over you then. Talking about drowning it with sound, I just spoke over you because I couldn't hear you properly in there. But they drown it out, don't they?
Yeah.
You can drown it out with music. But, you know, when they're in that basement and there's a shot where the Fratellis come back and they're all downstairs, and they found the money printing machine and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then Chunk is going on about, what's he talking about when he finds the body? He's losing his mind a bit, and he's saying he's had enough and all this kind of thing, and I can't remember what he's doing. But he opens the thing, he wants some, he can smell ice cream. So he opens this cold store, this sort of chest freezer, and he goes and he's like saying the flavours and all this kind of thing. And then there's that great shot of the guys from looking out behind Chunk, and they're all just kind of walking towards, thinking, oh my God, you know, and they've seen something he hasn't. And all of a sudden, again, that dead body is terrifying.
Yeah.
Even now, it's been shot through the centre of the head. I mean, it must have been Mama Fratelli, because Francis and Jake, they're not getting a shot like that off. They're not getting that clean shot in someone's head, are they? Not even from point blank. I don't think none of them could do it. But you know, you have that scene, then the body falls out and it like falls on Chunk, and he's like, it's a Steph, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, isn't it?
It's terrifying. And then obviously he gets locked in the freezer, they go down the fire grate, and then the adventure like really begins then, doesn't it? You're in the kind of the Indiana Jones ghost train section, you know. And that's and again, that's what I love about this film is pure adventure. Like at this point now, it is like, you know, they say elements of Indiana Jones, and there's, you can see the Spielberg stamp at this point. I think obviously with him producing it, you can see, like I say, the Indiana Jones stuff, the E.T. influences on this film. I would even say then Spielberg himself later on was influenced by it with things like Hook.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, especially on the ship at the end, the sequences on the ship with the walking the plank and all that kind of thing. And so they get down into this, I mean, what would you call it? Is it a network of tunnels? What is it?
Tunnels, yeah, that's it. And it's that's one of the things that always strikes me. The sets are just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, very little of it is green screen. You can kind of tell nowadays what has been done, but it's so few of the scenes. It's like flipping heck. I don't know how long it took to create these tunnels and every little kind of room, sub-room that they go into. And then, as you say, the ship itself, that was actually built, and it's unreal. So good.
Incredible. Well, when they built the ship, they didn't tell the kids, did they? And speaking of the bad language and whatnot, they had to... When they did the shot where they hit the water and then they look up and they all see the ship, like a few of them actually were like, oh, holy shit. So they had to cut that out and then reshoot and because they were just so awestruck by what they created, this massive pirate ship. And it's like a big, massive Disney set, isn't it, or something? Yeah. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. And even like things like where they... go through the skull, you know, when they're walking through the tunnels and there's that big skull.
Yeah.
And you sort of think, it's... When you look at it now, you sort of think, it looks a bit iffy. But at the same time, it doesn't lose any of its magic.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know, even though you know it's a big set and it's probably made of some sort of, like, you know, papier-mâché, polystyrene foam or whatever, and it's not rock. But it doesn't matter. That's the thing with the Goonies. It doesn't matter. All of those little things, they don't matter. It doesn't matter because it's about adventure. It's about where your mind is with it and nostalgia and harking back to being a kid and reliving your youth and wanting to relive that youth again.
Yeah.
Because I just pine for us being kids again every time I watch it. Every time I watch it, I just think, oh, man, I wish we could just go to the vaults again. Make some bow and arrows. You know what I mean? Someone set our den on fire once, and luckily... And we're not proud of this, are we? But luckily, we both needed the toilet, and we managed to stop the fire, didn't we, Gar?
I mean, the thing is, the fire weren't that big. I think we could have just stamped it out. I don't know why before we got a wee on it. That's the only way we're going to save our den.
Got to do it. We probably had, like, you know, 6 cans of Nemesis Pop each and stuff by that point.
Yeah, Mountain Dew.
Yeah, a little bit of screen. Just goes up. but yeah, you know, it's that, and again, it's that feeling that Goonies gives me. It makes me feel like that. And, you know, looking back on your childhood, if you had a happy childhood like we did, it's never going to be a bad thing, is it?
Exactly.
You
know,
so even if you lose you lose 5 minutes of the film because you just stop in your own world thinking, it's not a problem. And that's, you know, the Goonies has that magic. You know, this is the feel good series, isn't it? And the feel good bit in it for me, or one of the bits that I really love the scenes, is when they go down and they find the wishing well.
Yeah.
And you got this amazing looking, again, another amazing set where this water's cascading down through the caves and all this, and you've got this wishing well that it transpires is at the bottom of the well of the country club where Troy and his mates just happen to be hanging around a well. Where are we off tonight, lads? I don't know. Shall we go and lean on the well and look cool? And but you got the scene where, obviously, they get in touch with Troy because he realises Andy's down in the well, and she shouts up, Troy, you know, send the bucket down and the rope so I can climb back out. And then you have Mikey's speech. And this, for me, is probably, it's my top two favourite bits in the film because it is the essence of everything that's about youth and the Goonies for me. And should I read it? Because I don't want to ruin what he says. I don't want to ruin it. But Mikey's speech. So he says... Because they all want to go up the rope. And he's like, no, guys, like, Chester Copperpot never got this far. Like, you know, we could do this kind of thing. And then he says, the next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be at another school. Our parents want the best of stuff for us. But right now, they've got to do what's right for them because it's their time. Up there, it's their time. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. that's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket. Yeah. Outstanding. And that for me, like, it sums up the Goonies perfectly, because you only ever realise in hindsight that that was your time, don't you?
Yeah, that's it.
You know
it.
What I mean? You
yeah.
only ever realise that now when you're looking back yeah. watching the film, like, oh, man, that was my time. Remember when we did this and us talking about peeing on bloody dens who are on fire and making buzz and hours? That was our time, wasn't it, you know?
Yeah.
In terms of childhood, yeah. that was our time. And it's just, I got itchy ear. It's just absolutely magic. And that's one of my favourite scenes in the film.
And what's that kind of, that age-old kind of thing where people say childhood is wasted on the youth because you don't realise, do you? And,
yeah.
and at that time, you're yeah. doing that. But everyone just wants to grow up. I've been talking to my six-year-old and she's like, oh, I can't wait to be a vet. Yeah. I can't wait to be older so I can get married. I'm like, chill out.
Yeah.
All that. You've got plenty of time to be an adult. Yeah. Just enjoy being a kid. So yeah. I keep every week I'll say to her, right, that's it now. Stop growing. I'm yeah. happy that you're six. Just stop growing now.
And I feel, but they don't care. They don't listen. They don't listen. They just want to be, I want to be able to drive, Dad. I'm like, you don't, because yeah. then you have to pay for the car and you have to do all yeah. you have to put fuel in it and all this kind of thing. You know, Dad, I don't, you know, we're having the homeschooling at the minute because we're on lockdown, aren't we? So the homeschooling yeah. and then they're saying, oh, Dad, I don't want to do any schoolwork. You're saying, like, school's the best time of your life. But a kid, and yeah. we were the same. Our parents said it to us. We were like, no, it's not. When you yeah. look back, it is genuinely the best, isn't it? And, you know, like, Should we play that scene with Mikey? Because I think I didn't do it justice. Should we play it? Let's take a look at the scene because it's so good.
Don't you realize? The next time you see Sky, it'll be over another town. The next time you take a test, it'll be in some other school. Our parents, they want the best of stuff for us. But right now they gotta do what's right for them. Cause it's their time. Their time. Up there. Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here. That's all over the second we ride up Troy's bucket.
So yeah, so that was Mikey's speech, one of my favorite bits in the film. And like I say, I guess what I was trying to say is it just kind of invokes that feeling of, you know, like when you were leaving school for the summer holidays and then finally leaving school and you're like leaving high school in your final year and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, this like mad wide open world, you know, like what's in store for me and all this kind of thing, or just leaving your mates for a few weeks and you're not seeing them, you're thinking, oh man,
yeah,
this is going to be, you know, I'm going to be bummed out, but like, you know, this is our time, like this is, you know, adventure and all that kind of thing. And that's what it makes me feel like. I can't really sum it into words. I can't put it in a nicely worded phrase. I just can't, because it's there's too many facets of it. But that's what it feels like to me. It's that kind of that thing, and that's what the Goonies is about. That's what the Goonies is
yeah,
for me.
That's it. And yeah, I mean, this and so many. So yeah, I mean, it kind of, if you think about it in terms of runtime, it takes almost half the film for him to get down there and start having this adventure. But
yeah, it does.
When you do get down there, it's like so many different scenarios that they kind of encounter as well. It yeah. doesn't feel like it's like a fast end to the film or the fast half, because it's just so many items where they're in peril. And then, because it's like, so they kind of, at first they find the pipes, don't they? And they're like kind of stuck, so they start pulling on the pipes. But it's like that then, again, it's at the country club and like in the showers, the handles are coming into the wall and Troy's on the toilet and a big like geezer comes out and he's like going, Mommy, on the floor, or Daddy, whatever.
Daddy, isn't it? Have you noticed? Do you know what I noticed today for the first time ever?
Go on.
In the scene in the shower, one of the old fellas has got an eye patch on.
No, I didn't realise that.
Seriously, yeah, have a look back. I mean, if we can find the clip, we'll put it up. But one of the old fellas in the shower, when the taps come through the wall, one of them moves and then one behind him's got an eye patch on. I don't know if that's got any significance or what, I don't know.
Right.
But I only noticed it for the first time ever today.
Yeah.
Unless I was seeing things, but I don't think I was. I'm sure he had an eye patch on. But yeah, I mean, again, more comedy.
Yeah.
And it's got that like fine mix of adventure, comedy, you know, like, and different types of comedy, slapstick comedy, sort of, you know, physical comedy, and then that sort of the sight gags. You know, that kind of stuff, like the stuff with Troy and the toilet. And it's so good to see him get his comeuppance, the absolute whopper.
Yeah.
Does my head in, I don't like Troy. He's an idiot.
But it's kind of also, it's like, what I really like about it is those kind of breadcrumbs as well, because Chunk gets locked in with Sloth and they finally get out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, so they go past the pipes. It's like, yeah, Mikey's been here. So it's all this kind of breadcrumbs, so they know exactly where they're going, which I think is kind of well played in terms of the story writing. Yeah. So they, otherwise, they could have just gone off on a different tunnel.
Well, speaking of you saying about Chunk escaping and the like with Sloth, there's that scene when he initially escapes through the window, isn't it? And he runs to the road.
Yeah.
And then he comes out. And there's one of the best shots in it, I think, is the little wing mirror reveal of Jake Fratelli, because he comes out and he stops the car. He's like, I'm a kid, I'm just a kid. And then he stops the car, rolls up, and then it's angle on Chunk looking into the car. And you don't see the driver. And he's just started talking, gives it like in typical Chunk motor mouth mode, gives the whole story straight away. The Fratellis, they killed this guy. And then you see him just, he lights a match, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then you just see the reveal of Jake Fratelli in the wing mirror. And it's such a great little shot. And apparently, Jeff Cohen, Chunk, he then starts saying a Jewish prayer, I think. And that was one of his ad-lib things. And then they go and interrogate him. And again, this is why, for me, his performance is the best. In that interrogation scene, he's outstanding.
Yeah.
He's outstanding. He doesn't miss a beat at all when he's a kid. You know, he doesn't miss a single beat. And it's just, it's fantastic. And the stories, I mean, whether this has got anything to do with it, apparently the lies or the confessions that he makes are things that he'd actually done, because they're names of his relatives and stuff like that, and his own dog.
Yeah.
He blames something on. And it's just a magnificent performance from him. And again, more comedy. They then put him downstairs, don't they, with they lock him in with Sloth, who's terrifying initially, of course.
Yeah.
And then we see, that's the point at which we see Sloth watching the adventure films, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what film it is he's watching? I'm not sure which one.
It's one of those, I can't remember what the actor, someone Flynn. What's it? Errol Flynn.
It's Errol Flynn. Yeah.
It's one of the, I can't remember, Quicksilver or something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head.
He was wild, old Errol, I tell you.
Yeah.
I read his autobiography when I was young. Oh, wild man. So you get Sloth. And again, Sloth is pure joy in this film. And I think this is why he makes me sort of misty-eyed, I think. Because he's not had a good life, has he?
No.
He's been in chains. And when he becomes friends with Chunk, it's just... Matyshak plays it so well. It's just unbridled, childlike joy.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, something about it makes me sort of almost emotional, especially at the end. Which we'll get to that, because I don't want to ruin it yet. But I don't know, something about Sloth that I don't want to say I relate to, because I'll open myself up to a world of jokes. But I do, I really empathise with him, and I sympathise with him, and I think he's great.
And for a big fella, he's got such like a delicate touch in that acting as well. He's like, because you're talking about Chunk's like, trying to appease him with the baby Ruth candy bar, isn't it? And he kind of chucks it at him, whacks him in the head, and he's like, oh, and he can't reach it, and he's like pulling the chains out of the wall, so you can tell, flipping it, this guy has got such animalistic strength. And then he picks up the candy bar, and he's so delicate opening it up.
Yeah,
it's so well played. I mean,
we had some baby roost, didn't we, in the prelude as well. Again, another thing we wanted to pay homage to.
Yeah.
And Gaz, in preparation for the scenes we were doing, bought about 8,000 Baby Ruth bars, and I don't think I slept for about 4 days. I consumed about half my body weight in Baby Ruth bars just to get rid of them.
Yeah, on that day I was catering and props.
Should we have a quick look at it?
Yeah.
So here's the scene.
Of all the days you want to break down, you choose today. The day we've got to get to the show, you choose to break down, buddy. What's going on?
There is nothing more I can do. I'm sorry, Michael.
Who's Michael? Thank you.
Whoa. What do you want? Look, I've got nothing of value in the car. It won't even start. Look, you might as well take the keys if you want them. I don't need them. Okay. Do you want a candy bar? Got a baby. All right. Well, what do you want? Damn it, what do you want? I can't hear you. You're going to have to speak up.
Hey, Bayek! You won't believe how long I've been on mute for, lad. I tell you, it's only 40 bloody years.
So going back to what we were saying then about the kind of the perilous journey that the Goonies are on, obviously they come into this sort of, like I said, almost like a haunted house, ghost train, you know, Indiana Jones vibe, and they have all these different obstacles that One-Eyed Willie's put in place to guard his loot. Which is your favourite of those? Which is the best bit for you on that?
There's so many. I do like the one where they use the copper bones and Mikey's like turns it and then the floor caves in and Data falls, doesn't he? But uses his pinches of peril just to save himself, and it's ridiculous because there's no way that would keep even a small child up. But it's so brilliant. It's like pinches of peril. See, it does work. but I do like the piano of bones. And like they flip they get to one kind of ante room and they flip the map over it, and there's like notes that Andy has to play. And she's like, oh man, I did have some piano lessons, but it was such a long time ago. And it's like you play one note right, and the drawbridge door starts to fall. You play a note wrong, and part of the floor falls away. And that's just so good because they know the fratellities are right on their tail, aren't they? She's like, right, we've got to do this really, really quick. And so it's halfway down, and it's like gets to the last note. It's like, oh, is it an A sharp or a B flat? And Mikey's like, if you get it wrong, we're all B flat.
And it's one of the only bits there where the floor falls away that you sort of notice there's a bit of CGI going on.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, I think it is anyway, I'm assuming.
It looks to me,
when they fall back and you see the floor cave away and you see that aerial shot of them.
Yeah.
But it's such a good scene, and we've missed just while we're on this.
Go on.
The kissing scene.
Oh yeah.
With Mikey and Andy when he goes into the wrong bit, or Bran tells him to go and see what she's hollering about or whatever.
Yeah.
And because she wants to kiss Bran, and she ends up kissing Mikey in the dark. And I love that scene because when we're that age, we all wanted a kiss. A tasty older girl, didn't we? we all wanted to give Andy a smooch, didn't we?
The thing that got me with that one, though, obviously he was like shorter than Brandt, but like his feet are going, aren't they, like that? It's like she's like grabbing him by there to like pull him up to kiss him. I didn't really like his feet are going, aren't they, scrabbling along.
Well, she says, doesn't she? I think he must have been standing in a hole or something. Yeah. But yeah, she's quite aggressive, isn't she? She was getting that kiss, you know, by hook or by crook.
Definitely, yeah.
She was getting that kiss. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because obviously, you know, we all pined for a smooch off a bird like Andy when we were that age, didn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, one of the bits I like is obviously the Fratellis are catching him up. And I think it's just after the Bones piano, I think it is, when they're going across the log.
Yeah.
Or is it just... I think it's just before. And Data, again, with his fantastic array of inventions, gets the old sticky shoes. The slippy shoes. Is it
slick shoes.
Slick shoes, of course. The slick shoes. And he just presses the button, and then his Nikes just open up with a little spring at the back and starts kicking out some sort of funky-looking tar. And it's incredible, because not for one second do I think, That's not realistic. I immediately think, what a genius.
Yeah.
Of course, slick shoes. If you're walking across a log, you're going to put some sort of... I did read it was what it was mixed with, and I've forgotten now. I'm sure it was some... It was something like, I don't know what it was. Oh, what was it? I can't remember. But I did look up the composition of the slick goo, but I've forgotten it now, so I do apologise. But that's one of my favourite bits. And then obviously the Fratellis, again, with more slapstick sort of Stooges-style comedy, end up both legs akimbo on the on the log, you know, with a fair pain in their one-eyed willies. That's what we've got to talk about. The elephant in the room that is the one-eyed willie.
I know. I know.
None of them, it's not referred to at all.
Yeah.
You know, we're all there like going, every time they say it, you know. And I'm trying to not laugh at it in front of my child, you know what I mean? I'm like, you know, it's the elephant in the room and none of them reference it.
Yeah,
no
nothing.
One's bothered.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Willie a term for it in America?
Surely. Don't know. Let us know if we've got any US viewers, please let us know. Is a Willie a Willie?
Or is it a cack? Junk Jansen.
Yeah.
What else do they call it? I don't know. But anyway, but that's one of my favourite bits. So obviously then they go through the Bones piano and then down that amazing slide.
I love water slides. Water slides are my favourite thing, I think. Do you know when I go on holiday? It's like I always pick the destination that's got a water slide. I don't care if the hotel's rubbish. If it's got a water slide close, I'm there. I absolutely love it. And when they go, and it seems like it's miles long.
Hang on, but you say that though. Remember how disappointed we were when they got rid of the diving boards in Wrexham?
Yeah, no, that is a point, yeah.
You know, we were gutted about that, weren't we?
Yeah. I think because the slide wasn't that great. It wasn't that good.
It was rubbish.
Yeah.
It's rubbish, and then obviously the local kind of the rumours that go around someone's pooed in the slide on opening day.
Yeah,
and everyone's like, "What? Someone's pooed in the slide?" But this is our local swimming match. They got rid of the diving boards, and me and Gaz used to go on, and they were pretty high at the time. As a kid, it felt like 100 foot high, didn't they?
Yeah.
So we'd go for a swim, and then when we wanted to go home, the standard was like the unwritten rule as a child was you have to bomb off the top board, get chucked out.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, out. Sorry, I was going anyway, mate. Whatever. Get a hot dog. Get a can of pop. Go home.
I always remember talking about Spielberg. Your irrational fear of there being a great white shark in the swimming pool in the chlorinated water.
It's still getting me now. I think if I was faced with those boards again and looked down, I'd probably still have that same fear. I just had the feeling that someone was going to, like, you know, raise up some sort of guard at the side, you know, a frogman, a man in a little suit, and he'd raise it up as I was just airborne. See this thing come out. But, that slide is awesome, isn't it? It's such a fun scene.
Yeah.
Such a fun scene. And every time I watch it, I think, oh, man, I'd love to go with that.
Yeah.
And obviously they go down there, and this is the point at which we're near the end of the film. They're down and they come into where One-Eyed Willie's ship is docked, moored, whatever you want to call it, stuck.
Yeah.
In this massive cave opening in these rocks. And now we need to talk about now the deleted octopus scene, don't we?
I was going to say, yeah, I'm glad you flagged it up, yeah. Which I think is available on YouTube.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Because it's.
I'm glad they deleted it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but going fast forwarding, so right at the end, they talk about the octopus, and it's like Data says the octopus is really scary, and it's like, well, why didn't they just edit that out? It's like an easy thing to get rid of.
Yeah,
but
I think they left it in because it was the policeman thinking Chonko's lying again, or like, you know, the kids are just, you know, full of stories. But I when I watched that deleted scene, I'm so glad they did delete it.
I know what you're saying, but I think if we would have watched it as kids, we'd be like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's an octopus. It's there, man.
Yeah, I get what you're saying there. But when you watch it now, you think it's too unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like at this point, everything that's happened could happen. It's believable. There's no, like, you know, alien, massive, huge sea monster that no one's ever seen before.
Yeah.
You know, so when you get that, they come into the water and obviously Steph thinks that mouth is touching her leg or whatever when it's actually a massive tentacle. Like touching her leg, she turns around and slaps him, and then obviously behind her, this huge octopus rears up with the animatronic isn't the best either, I don't think, on this one. And they've got some amazing animatronics in this film, like Sloth's face.
Yeah,
they had to coordinate the blinking with Matyshak's actual one good at his real eye.
Yeah,
and they had to sort of coordinate and the eye turning and all this kind of thing, and the ears wiggling. Like, so they had, you know, amazing stuff in this. I'm not being detrimental here.
Yeah, yeah.
But the octopus. It's not the best. But you know what I love about the scene?
Go on.
There's one shot where it goes and he shows it underwater and mouse biting the tentacle. And it just made me laugh because I thought, hey, what would you do in that situation? Oh, mouse is just going to have a bite on it. He's going to gnaw at the... See if he can get it to let go. And But I'm so glad because for me, watching it now, it would, as an adult, it would make me go, oh, come on. Because it's just too unbelievable.
I think you can get away with it. I think you've invested in them right until this point. You're like, do anything. Have E.T. in there if you want. You can get away with anything.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because I think at that point, it's like an adventure that, you know, you could well imagine as a kid. Like, you know, something it could have happened to us, we wish.
Yeah.
As a kid. Once that octopus comes in, it's like, oh, it's gone too fantastical now for me. It's stepped over the line. So I'm glad they deleted it.
Yeah.
So they finally then, they get on the ship. And what's the name of the ship again?
It's the Inferno, apparently.
The Inferno.
Yeah, but it's such a feat of engineering. Like, again, when we're talking about like everything, the production design, all the props, everything that it looks fantastic. And the ship itself, was a full ship. And apparently they were they couldn't get rid of it at the end. They were trying to give it away to other production companies, going, right, are you doing something with a ship? You can have this. We can't get rid of it.
Oh. We'd make room somewhere, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
On the Davis Locker back lot, we'd make room for the Inferno somewhere.
I.e. Chris's back garden.
But yes, they get on the ship, and obviously initially they think, well, where's the treasure?
Yeah.
And they sort of kick off at Mikey, don't they? So, you know, like, because they've gone through all this trauma and there's nothing here but, you know, a ship with some swords and some bones on it and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think it's, I think it's Andy then who pulls a sort of a bit of rope and then the thing falls down and there's an inscription on the... What do you call it? Like a portal kind of thing, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, a trapdoor portal type thing, yeah.
Like a trapdoor, yeah. And then Mikey goes up first, doesn't he? And he asks him to stay down.
Yeah.
And just give him a minute. Because I think, you know, that's what I wanted to mention, actually. All through this film, and this is what I thought about this the other day when I watched it again. You know in E.T. where you have that, E.T. and Elliot have got this sort of parallel, this relationship where they're almost one. Yeah. I think there's an element of that with Mikey and One-Eyed Willie.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're kindred spirits in this whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sure they were going to, one of the subplots was going to be something to do with Mikey's asthma and that they both had asthma or something.
I read that. It was like, I don't know what kind of inhaler a pirate has.
One of those muskets.
Yeah.
With the thing on the end.
But he refers to him as like one of the original Goonies, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And it's a really sweet scene because obviously you've had this wild adventure to that point and then it is this sort of a, it lulls down, doesn't it? And you think that when they see all the treasure, it would be like, we've got loads of money, we've got all this, there's billions and millions worth of doubloons and gold here. But I love how they play it, like, sentimentally.
Yeah.
Almost, like you say, where he stands there with Willie and he has that, you know, connection with him and he says to him, you know, like you say, you're the original Goonie or the first Goonie.
Yeah.
Or whatever he says, and he has a conversation with him saying, what does he say? You've been waiting for me or something like that, doesn't he? I can't remember the exact words. I do apologise, but, you know, we're not trying to go off the script word for word. It's such a nice scene. And then it's made even better by the fact that the other Goonies are in the background and he doesn't know. And they watch this exchange that he has with Willie and they don't say anything.
Yeah.
Because they know the sort of gravity of the moment for him, because he's been the leader the whole time.
Yeah.
Even though he's one of the younger ones, even though his older brother is there, his kind of de facto boss in the household, if you will, Mikey's been the leader the whole time. And now he has his moment, like his crowning glory with his, I wouldn't say he's not his nemesis, is he? He's kind of his...
I think you were right when you said kindred spirit. That's,
You know, and he says, you know, like... you've been waiting for me or whatever, you're the first Goonie, blah, blah, and then they're all there. And then he says, how long have you guys been there?
Yeah.
And then Bran says, long enough.
Yeah.
And when I was watching, I was like, well, what's the relevance of that then? I don't know I couldn't work out what Bran was kind of trying to say there, like, are they saying, like, okay, we get it now.
Yeah.
We get why you wanted to do this. I don't know. It doesn't, maybe that's one of those lines, like you say, that's just got left in there, which was part of a subplot or something, but we'll never know. So obviously, they then find all the treasure. Mikey says, don't touch that, Willie. Leave some for Willie.
Yeah, fortuitously, because you know later on it's a booby trap, isn't it? But yeah, so they go start going mental, don't they? Just getting all the stuff, all the gems and the money.
Wish you would, wouldn't you? You know.
Yeah, definitely. And,
and obviously
his secret marbles, don't they? He leaves the marbles there, puts the gems in the marble bag.
Yeah.
And that I think is almost like a little bit of a parallel, because to him these marbles were like his best keepsake. So it's almost like a, here's my treasure, Willie. I'm giving you this, and I'm going to take a couple of things in return.
Yeah. I never thought of it like that. Yeah, definitely, for sure. Like now you mention it.
Yeah.
100%. A really good point. And the Fratellis turn up then, don't they?
Yeah, and I love that bit because it's like they turn around and they're like, yo.
But she's really sort of. She's quite casual about the whole thing. She's like,
everybody out.
And then she just goes out with her gun, like, expecting them, like, you know, just get out and they'll follow. You know, not thinking that they, you know, these kids who have evaded them this far.
Yeah.
I'd be thinking, right, what are them little sods going to plot now? I'm thinking they're like 6 or 7 Kevin McAllisters.
Yeah.
Ready to, like, set some sort of trap, booty trap for me, you know?
Yeah.
That's another great bit, the booty trap thing. The running joke of that is hilarious every single time. But the Fratellis come. They take them all kind of hostage again, and they make Andy walk the plank, don't they?
Yeah, and that's it, because the thing that makes them mean as well, it's not like, right, just get away with what you've got, and we're going to take the big haul. It's like, no, give me all the stuff that you've got, and we're going to take everything. That's the thing that makes them mean as well, the Fratellis.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, proper. Like I say, they're not. At that point, again, though, they're getting away with the fact that they are super evil, murderous monsters. But they're kind of bungling idiots at the same time, aren't they?
Yeah.
But like you say, with this really mean-spirited side. It's a bad combination. So then they make Andy walk the plank. She gets on. They've got... I mean, I don't know how Brand even gets away from whichever Fratelli brothers got him with a sword around his neck. Because she chucks Andy, and then he's like, Andy! And then all of a sudden he's free. And he goes for the, dives in after her, saves her.
And then think that's it. It's all, everything's gone to pot. There's no way out of this. They're all going to probably drown.
The Goondocks is finished. Bad news. No treasure to save the Goondocks. And then what happens, Gar?
Off screen, it's like, hey, you guys. And it's like, that is my favourite bit. It's obviously Sloth and Chunk have got there. And it's like, Chunk? It's like, no, Captain Chunk. He's got his little pirate's hat on.
And this is what I was saying. This is what I love about Sloth and why he gets me misty-eyed. Because at this point, you think about this guy with the worst life. And then all of a sudden he gets to be one of the heroes like Errol Flynn that he's been watching on the screen. And he gets to, it's just this pure joy on him. Like, because he's not realising to him, because obviously he's got a childlike mind. He doesn't know really the kind of ramifications of what he's doing. He just thinks this is an adventure. He's in one of the films that he loves. And so he's got this unbridled joy jumping on the thing with the knife coming down the sail and all that kind of thing. And it's just... The way he swings in, it's movie magic. And
Ripped off his top, doesn't he, with his Superman T-shirt underneath. And obviously Richard Donner was the director of that. But it's like, and they let him use the fanfare, the Superman's
the
fanfare.
Music,
it's like, oh man, I love it.
It's just amazing, isn't it? And like I say, that bit gets me misty-eyed, because I do think for some reason I get all emotional about, like, oh, he's had such a hard life, and then he gets to live his dream, and... He gets to jump down and be like a heroic, swashbuckling hero. And then the Fratellis have to try and sort of, what do they, bring him down a bit, don't they? They try and con him again after what they've done to him all these years. The rats. And then Mama Fratelli, and she really annoys me when she tries to hug him and she's going, laughing, and she's touching his chest.
Yeah.
And then she does this look. They just say, oh God, he's horrible. And it's like, oh God, I'm strangling you. It's your son, the horrible witch.
Yeah.
But it's such a magic moment. Like, I don't know. I don't know who is the heart of this film, Gat?
I think it's... Mikey, I think, pushes it forward all the time. But just the group, I think it is the group. If there was one of those not there, I think you would be like, it is a little bit lacking. Yeah. And then, that subplot with Sloth, like you say, he's just a childlike man, but like a man baby almost. He always looks childlike, doesn't he, in his appearance as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. It's that
they all have their
adventure.
Moments, don't they? They all have their moments. Yeah. In it, like you say, and the reason I only asked them was because at that point it does feel like that Sloth becomes the film, because it's almost like, you know, his arc is complete in them, because he's kind of, he's free, he's got freedom, and the whole thing that's given him freedom is everything that he's been chained to, i.e. watching these films to keep him quiet, like that's part of his freedom.
And then
weird thing.
The next bit gets me when, so they go back, don't they? So they're all in the water, the Goonies. The Fratellis are like, we're going to go and get all the treasure now. And they set the booby trap off. So all the ceiling starts caving in and part of the wall. So they're going to get stuck, really, the Goonies. And then Sloth gets off the boat and he's like helping them. And to him, he doesn't really realise what's happening. Like, Chug's like, come with me. And he saves them all, but he doesn't realise, by almost sacrificing himself, letting them escape, that he's going to be then back with the Fratellis, and he's going to be back in that basement. And you think to yourself, oh, bloody hell. At that point, you don't know that he's going to get out. You're like, oh, my God. Yeah. So he's like the ultimate sacrifice. He saved his best mate at that point, Chug, to get him out. It's like, oh, my God.
That's what I mean. He's had that taste of, as he knows it, pure freedom.
Yeah,
you know, he'd become one of his heroes, and we know, we're watching it, and we see, oh God, he's getting to act out the things that he's always loved, that have kind of given him some sort of happiness in the crappy life that he's had, and then all of a sudden it's going to be cruelly robbed from him again.
Yeah,
albeit in the form of sacrificing himself to save everyone else, and he just, at that point, he sort of becomes the heart of the film, doesn't he? Because without him, it all goes down the Swanee, doesn't it?
That's it, yeah.
So obviously then they get out. We're at the end of the film. Some great shots of when they're walking down the beach, that sort of silhouetted group shot. I think it looks fantastic.
And apparently, originally, they were going to go back to the house, weren't they? They're going to go back to the house, and that's when... so then Mr. Perkins, I think his name is, he goes and he goes, right, here's the papers, you need to sign them. And that's when Rosalita finds the gems in Mikey's marble bag. But they do it on the beach in the end. Yeah. And she's so he's starting to sign it. And then she starts shouting stuff. And she's like, oh, Mouth, what's he saying? No pen? No sign? And they run. And then he's like, Mr. Watch, like, they find the gems, don't they? That fantastic shot when they're looking down on the gems as a group shot. And then he's like... And then Mr. Walsh is so overdramatic, I love. I will not be signing this today. And then he chucks at the papers, and it's obvious that someone chucks a load more paper from behind him.
It doesn't matter at that point, does it?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's so good. You know what I always think in that scene?
Go on.
Well, the last few years I've seen it anyway. I look at Andy's dad, and he looks exactly like Borat. He looks exactly like Borat. I don't care what anyone says. If we can find a clip or a frame of it, we'll show it now. But he looks exactly like Borat. That's all I can think every time I see it. And I tell you what, we've not mentioned in those last scenes, in the scene where they're on the ship and all that, fantastic score. The music is wonderful.
Yeah, so
in this film, it's a composer called Dave Grusin, I think his name is, and he's done films like The Firm, etc., etc., and you know, whatever back catalogue. I think he's won an Oscar as well. I can't remember the name of the film. I think it was about 88 he won an Oscar. Right. So a couple of years after Goonies. But an amazing swashbuckling, you know, perfect adventure score for this film. And I just wanted to mention that there anyway. I don't want to talk over the end, but...
You might as well talk about, just very briefly, Cyndi Lauper's involvement in it as well.
Of course.
Which is fantastic.
The Goonies
are
good enough.
When we did our prelude, the bit on the bike, we had that in as like our temp music for the longest time, and we just couldn't find anything else, could we? I mean, I started writing to Sony, I think Labour's going, I know we're nobodies, but can we use this music? No one responded to us, but...
didn't you even try and contact Cyndi Lauper?
Cyndi Lauper, her agent, I like found like, she's got about five different agents, so it was like, right, I'll just email everyone, but no, we didn't get anything.
No, we didn't get nowhere, did we? So we had to use some decent, you know, the other decent music that we have. But it would have been, that was our, like I say, our temp music for ages, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, but it would have been perfect to have it, but never mind. But yeah, fantastic. The music video, I mean, I think Andre the Giant plays Sloth. and stuff like that. And the Cyndi Lauper, the Goonies Are Good Enough music video. And it's mega. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. Because again, it's like an awesome slice of nostalgia, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the plot in 5 minutes, isn't it? It's fantastic.
So anyway, we've got this end scene. And one of the other things that always stands out in this end scene for me is obviously the police come, and then Sloth emerges with the rest of the Fratellis.
Yeah.
And the police are going to arrest him as well, aren't they?
Yeah,
and he's like, no, these are the bad guys, he's not a bad guy, blah, blah, blah. And then I love the fact that Chunk's just like, he's not asked his mum and dad or nothing.
I was going to say like, that. No, yeah.
Sloth, you're coming to live with me now.
Yeah. Could you imagine if your kid rocked up with Sloth going, yeah, Dad, Sloth's living with us now. He's like, is he? We've done a background check.
But being us two, we'd probably look and go, well, he's got a Superman T-shirt, so I probably trust him.
Get him on.
He's fine. Here you go. Spare room's there, mate. Tease at 6. But I mean, it's a, you know, we're on the end now, and it's an amazing, amazing finish to the film, in it, because obviously, like you say, they rip up the papers, the bad guys, well, the other set of bad guys, i.e. Troy Perkins and his dad, they've been bamboozled because now they're not going to get to smash the houses down, because Troy says something like, oh, we've got another 50 houses to demolish after yours and all this kind of thing. It's like, oh, shut up, Troy. Douchebag. I just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
I just wish Sloth would have punched him, you know what I mean? Then you get the shot at the end where they see the ship going off into the distance, don't they? Off into the horizon. And then I think it's after that, it cuts back. And then they're all stood on the edge of the cliff, and then Sloth just goes, ah! And then they all just go, yeah! I love that bit. Because you sort of think, why did they do that? It's just, it's just, oh man. And I remember when I finished watching it earlier on, I just sort of like sat back like that. And I said to the good lady, I looked beside and I was like, it's just movie magic.
Yeah.
Movie magic. I just, you know, every single time. I've seen it a million times. And it's just movie magic.
And that's why there's such a clamour, isn't there, for a sequel. People just wish there was another one. And you think, well, yeah, I mean, if they could have replicated the magic, then fair enough. Yeah. But as a standalone movie, it's perfect, perfect.
I think the cast would be up for it, because obviously we've not mentioned Josh Gad of Frozen fame.
Yeah.
Has recently reunited all the cast in a Zoom call, as we're all doing now, like we're doing now when we're talking remotely due to lockdown. So he's reunited all the cast, Josh Brolin, Sean Astin, Corey Feldman, you know, they're all there.
Got them all, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and I bet they'd be up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know.
Now, why. Because you'd think, it's their kids, isn't it? Their kids are going back. But it's you're just going to tell the same story and take away the shine of it a little bit. But for a new generation, you think, I'm surprised it's not happened. It's almost like a Back to the Future, and that's what Josh Gad is doing next. I don't want to plug his podcast all the time, but that's his next thing. He's getting all the Back to the Future people together.
Yeah.
But they've Zemeckis has come out and said, no, and Bob Gale, we never do it. We're never remaking it, because everyone's saying, get Tom Holland on it as Marty McFly, but they say, no, it'll never happen.
I love Tom Holland, but I think just leave it. Because someone did a deep fake, didn't they, with Tom Holland, and that's why it sort of all kicked off from there. But I don't want to see a sequel to The Goonies.
Yeah.
I don't. I just don't know how they do it. I was going to say, oh, they'll just ruin it with a load of CGI and all that kind of thing. But then I thought, well, I really like the new Jumanji films.
Yeah,
and
they're not bad.
And I know there's a load of CGI in the original Jumanji, but I thought, oh, I'm not going to like this. Leave Jumanji alone. But the new ones are brilliant. And they did put a new spin on it.
Yeah.
And they are enjoyable films. But The Goonies, I just don't know how. I don't know. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't want to veer off course. But I think Jumanji, the first remake of the Jumanji was really, really good. But then I just think they just did the same story for the second one, although it was enjoyable. And I think you would kind of almost fall into that trap of trying to remake Goonies. It's got to be similar, because that's what everyone loves, but then everyone will go, it's just the same, isn't it? It's just the same.
Yeah, because what would you do?
Yeah, exactly.
What would they do? I mean, unless you just used, like I think what they've probably done with the new Ghostbusters, like unless you just use a few of the characters and then have a completely new story with a new set of kids and all that kind of thing, and it's totally different, but there's some elements that tie it together, kind of. There's a spine there, you know? But I just don't know. I'd leave it alone.
Yeah, I agree.
Leave it alone, I think.
I agree.
Should we leave it alone there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is going to be about 4 hours long, I think. The edit will be fun to try and get this down to some usable stuff instead of just... Yeah. It is Chris and Garris history.
I like it. Waffling on.
Yeah, what did they do when they were kids? But yeah, I mean, so next... You think this is long. Next episode is going to be Mammoth. So talking Tom Holland, what we've decided to do is go big with Avengers double bill. So it's going to be Infinity War and Endgame together. So yeah, that'll be hours long. Hours and hours.
Oh my God, yeah. It'll be longer than the films.
Yeah.
We'll have to have an intermission.
Yeah.
And I'm getting on, so my bladder, I'll definitely have to have an intermission, I think. But anyway, that was a meandering overview of what we love about the Goonies. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed us getting almost misty-eyed and sentimental about our Goonies-esque upbringing.
Yeah.
We could have gone into that in a lot more detail, I think, couldn't we? We didn't even tell you about the piss and maggot bottle, but that's another story.
For another time.
That's for another film. But thank you for watching. And if you want to tell us why you love The Goonies, why it's a feel-good film for you, then please get in touch with us across our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter on @TheDavisLocker. If you want to listen to this as a podcast, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And do you know what? We've also got a little website, haven't we, Gar?
So yeah, we have a lovely little website, www.thedavislocker.com. And you'll find on there loads of news, reviews, everything about me and him, all our old feel-good film episodes are on there. So if you want to check them out, we do recommend them. So yeah, I think that's it, mate.
That's it. So as always, if you're on lockdown, you're feeling down, get a feel-good film on and pick yourself up a little bit. Look after each other. Stay safe. Stay at home. Protect the NHS. And we will see you soon.
See ya.